Blog Talk Radio.
Assalamu alaikum. This is your beloved brother Murad Muhammad, live on your radio, Blog Talk Radio. On behalf of New Africa Excellent Enterprise, LLC, Murad speaks. Ladies and gentlemen, and friends, enemies. Yes, I even welcome my enemies because they are listening and they're willing to criticize and they're willing to stop progress. And hopefully today I would be able to bring to you what is happening in society that allows us not to progress. For we believe that the devil only operates anywhere else but within ourselves. And we don't come to the conclusion, for whatever reason, I've been teaching it for 2.5 years on this radio, trying to instill in you that that devil is in you. And you do not understand or can't conceive in your mind why do he exist. We refer to him as the jinn, but he has several names. Lucifer, some of you call him in the Bible, and Iblis is his name that is known by the Quran as well as the Torah as well as the Bible if you will read it. But you got to understand that most Jewish people believe that they rule and they punish and they don't believe in the hereafter. Now, not all of them. Don't misconstrue what I'm saying to you. Not all of them, but the ones that wants to capitalize and control the masses of the people and keep you asleep, those are the devil. And those people believe you get what you see, what you can touch, and what you can feel in this world. There's no other world. They don't believe in Jesus. Should I say it again? They don't believe in Jesus, and nor do they believe in the devil. But there is some learned Jews. And those learned Jews have studied scripture and practice in obedience to Allah just like you and I am. They are under the religion of Judaism, very good Christians. I surely believe my mama was a good Christian. My father was a good Christian. My siblings was a good Christian. I didn't know too much about Christianity, but I thought I was a good Christian. Because I was raised by a Christian mother that instilled in me the best things that you can do as a human being to order to be successful in the world. Now, surely she didn't go into depth, but because she represented herself as a good person, loyal to her children, obedient, that I believe, to God. But she made you make your prayer before you went to bed. You had to say a prayer before you ate your food. Oh, did she teach you that we are surviving because you have to thank God? Now, my mother accepted Islam, and she was about 82 years old, and I was so honored and pleased to know that my mother came to Islam after calling me by the name that she has given me and didn't relate to Islam back then in the early 60s. She called it Malcolm X Islam. Yes, she did. She never referred to it as Islam. She never said Muslim. She said Malcolm X Islam. Is that what you want for yourself? Yes, I did. I understood Malcolm X, and I was motivated by Malcolm X. That taught me about the Honorable Elijah Muhammad. And I ask God to be pleased with his goodness, separate his faults from his goodness, and grant him paradise. And surely I fell in love with the Honorable Elijah Muhammad. This is a creation of New Africa Excellent Enterprise, LLC. We decide to create our own radio show. And you're going to hear from so many people that will come on the show. Thus far, We had Saladin Bilal, who did a magnificent job in explaining the language, because there's language in religion, and the language can trick you up. The language can make you think it's one thing, but it's another. What makes the language important? Because some of you say, oh, I went to school for language, but not that language. That language that's sealed, that you can't open that book because you don't have the key. But a man that comes to the understanding, that's what the Holy Quran calls it. When you read the Holy Quran, you have to read the opening prayer. And because that book was sealed, I want to speak about that book that they call a seal and tell you why they use the word seal. You got to understand that we human beings, man, put a title to everything. Yes, we have the ability to name this and that and things that you see in existence. It was man. Man has that creativity. And if God's willing tonight, I would like to talk about that book that is sealed and why they use that language as sealed. The language changed to trick you up. And they don't need much to trick it, to con you, deceive you. But everything has a reason. Imam Wallace D. Muhammad, I'm a student of Imam Wallace D. Muhammad, and I take pride in telling you that I'm a student of Imam Wallace D. Muhammad. And Imam Wallace D. Muhammad told us to go in that Bible, and you will see a word that is used, but you will never find that word in Revelation spelled J-O-B-E, Job. And they tricked that word. It was always J-O-B. I mean, I'm sorry, yes, J-O-B, not J-O-B-E. So it was Job, but that little E, that little vowel that made you call it Job. And you thought that meant some individual. Do you have the patience of Job? Our grandmothers used to say it all the time. Do you have the patience of Job? No, it was Job. So this is the way they trick the language up, like the word seal. And hopefully, if God permits it, that we can speak about that. But we have a lineup coming up. And our lineup started on Tuesday. I came on the air, that's my day, Saladin Bilal, who did an excellent job, and Elio Bay. And I introduced both of them as imams, because that's who they are, imams. Men that study, men that can lead you in prayer, in congregation prayer, and men that understand the right side of the Holy Quran. Those are imams. But you'll find anyone that socializes with me, when we're not speaking the word of God, call us by our first name. We're just like you. We bleed, we hurt, we get sick, we make mistakes, we commit sin, and we die and go in the same hole that you go in. The same dirt goes over top of this flesh, like it goes over top of your flesh. The Honorable Elijah Muhammad used to say, may Allah be pleased with him and grant him paradise. He used to say, there's no big I and no little U's. He drove that home. And as a youngster at 13, I didn't really understand it, but it sounded good to me. And I grew up to understand, I don't care how big you become in El-Islam. In El-Islam, the same equal in your ability, in your creativity, that God has given you in any person that came the same way you came in this world, and that is through the womb of that female. That makes you equal, equal opportunity. Now, some rises above others because they want more out of life than to become complacent. I read as a young man in the hadith, it says, live a little bit above your means. And some people say, well, why would God tell you and I to live a little above your means? Oh, that weighed heavy on my brain. But it sounded correctly. But I wanted to know the real reason for it. And I came up with the conclusion, if you live a little above your means, then you'll get up and go to work. You got a job. And what is your job? yet not Joe, job. What is your job? And your job is to work for your boss. And who is your boss? Allah. Yes. He is the master, the creator of all system of knowledge. And when you understand that, you will keep reaching. You'll keep reaching. You will never come complacent in life if you live a little bit above your means. You say, I'm going to get to the first floor, but you want to get to the second. I want to get to the eighth floor. Now you want to get to the ninth. You want to come out of school in the 12th, but you want to continue on. And then when you get those degrees, you get complacent. No, no. Study all the way to your grave, because in the wisdom of God never ends. And that's why you and I do not die. We evolve. And hopefully we can talk about that, because most people are going very haywire because they lost their parents. I saw a young man on national TV on the Steve Harvey show, and what did he do? He beat up his wife. Why? Because he decided to get drunk, and he decided to grieve because his father died. Now, you would think that a man lost his parent or parents, that he got to go crazy. Do you really think that God, that created you from a clot of sperm, blood, and water, and mold you to look like you look today, is going to kill that? Why would he kill it? So you don't die, brothers and sisters. You just leave this world that we all have to make it through it. This is your trial. Oh, yes. Your trial is every day. Because God said it. I didn't say it. God said, I will try you all the way to where? To your grief. And when it's over, it's over. You have nothing more to prove. Now you have to be earned. You have to earn your debt that you owe to God. And he don't want anything of this world. Don't you think he wants your money, your fame, your ego? No, God needs nothing of that. But he do needs your goodness. He does need that which you that you would do is being written. And I think the last time I was on the radio, I explained to you that every human being on the face of the planet Earth has an angel. One on the right and one on the left. That's two angels. Two angels. See how blessed we are? Do the insects got an angel on their shoulder? They're not human. Do the jinn got an angel on their shoulder? They're not human. Do the animals? What living creature has an angel on both shoulders? Only the human being. Only God's creativity. Well, you don't have to say what angels on the angels of the angels. Only three creatures. Creature. What creature is that? Angel is a creature. But he's created out of light. And the jinn is a creature. He was created out of smoke and fire. And then the human being was created out of mud, dirt, with water molded into shape. And that's how we was able to come up with our father, Adam. Now, everybody doesn't like dirt, brothers and sisters. But God wanted to prove to his angels and to his jinn, I don't need anything that exists. I say that I'm going to make man. There's no such thing as we going to make man. Who is he talking to? He said, in the earth. And I think I spoke about that on Thursday. Brothers and sisters, on Monday, you will have Saladin back again. And I believe who will be with him is Wali Muslim. And you will hear two of the finest men that grew up in our community to be able to speak to you. And then on Tuesday, I will return. And actually, that's my day. I do 2 hours. And then you will have Eli Obey, and he will speak and bring you his hour for 7 to 8. But I got others, and I have others that have said they will do time on the air, because everyone I choose has something to offer to you that you would love to listen to. And tonight at 8 o'clock, I will be on with a beautiful sister named Camilla Tajadeen, a young lady that's a lot of respect amongst the sports world and entertaining world. She had her own network. We used to televise right there in North New Jersey on Gateway. And I used to fly in and do her show. And she's very professional. Muhammad Ali had a love for her. Herbert Muhammad had a love for her. And anytime you can walk amongst men with money, I'm not talking about street money. I'm talking about real money, millions, and keep your dignity and your respect. She wore the clothing of the Islamic Muslim women from head to toe. They loved her character, and that's the credibility that she has. But she's an expert. She has the ability for years to interview some of the best Spike Lee, Muhammad Ali, you can name it. She interviewed them. However, she chose to be on air, God willing, for Sunday evening from 8 to 9. She will come to you with all these different celebrities. And who is going to be her first one? Me. So she will interview me today and take me out of this mold that I am as an e-man when I speak on the radio and bring me into the life that I operated for over 35 years. It's an unbelievable life, and it was very successful for me. It was trial and error for me, and as I stepped back and looked at it, I said, did I do all of that? And did I was able to dodge Satan's tricks, and Satan, who tried his best to put me in a category that will target me as low-lifed, not to be trusted, a thief, a liar. Well, I don't have that. And God willing, I want to talk about Bill Cosby. I did not think about talking about Bill Cosby, but I did my homework, and I got some things that is going to blow your mind. But this is Satan. This is how Satan works. And so we want to just inform you that every day that we come on, and we'll be on 7 days a week, 52 weeks out of the year, and we will mention to you who will come on in the next hour or the next day. And you should be excited that you turn on this radio show. And inshallah, I want to go back where I came from, national news, national TV, central media, Facebook, Twitter, you name it. We should be on it. That is modern-day technology. And I'm calling out to all y'all experts out there. We got experts, young men, young women with expertise to be a part of that. And I want to speak about that if we could. We want to say, with God's name, the merciful benefactor, the merciful redeemer. We want to thank Allah. We thank him for our presence today, for our life and our health. And we pray that he always is with us and guide us and grant us his mercy. It's important to know and remember that the first word of communication was to our prophet, Prophet Muhammad Ibn Abdullah. And he said to the prophet, read, ikra, read in the name of your Lord who created. Praise be to Allah. High glorified is he, the creator of everything. If that is in the word that is in the Holy Quran. We always want to say Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim, because when you say Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim, things come to you. Allah takes over. Your spirit comes alive. Your soul comes alive. And it allows you to be in tune with the obedience of God. And that intellectual mind just spits out everything that clouds it and confuses it. You know, when you're confused, you got to have what they call downtime. I don't need downtime. Anytime I feel like I'm down, I say, Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim. And Allah lifts that spirit. Some of y'all go to church and hear that music, and that music touch your soul, and you got the spirit. You forgot about you was hungry. You forgot about that you're down and out. So no longer you have downtime. So you go to church and that music playing, the preacher is preaching, and they touch your soul. Well, you know what's more powerful than that? Thinking Allahu Akbar, dickering to Allah, remembering when you're thinking, because you can think around the world. But when you're thinking about God, that is the best thinking, and that lifts your spirit. Try it. Try it, brothers and sisters. Try to be down and just stop and say, what's God's name, the merciful benefactor, the merciful redeemer? See what happened to your soul. See what happened with the spirit. There's nothing spooky about it. Just think about it. God is closer to you than your juggler thing. We hear it all the time. It's common phrase. Where did it come from? Who told you that? But is it amazing that everybody knows that? Who did that? Because that's God talking to you, and you have no thought. God is closer to you than your juggler thing. And why he say, I'm closer to you than the hair on your head? Why did he say, I'm closer to you than the bones that holds that flesh together? Why did he say, I'm close to you and your mother and your father? Saying, I'm close to you than your jugular vein. Because the jugular vein pumps blood to all vital organs of the body. Cut the jugular vein, you die. You're dead. So God says he's close to you than your jugular vein. So if you understand that, and you have conceived that in your mind, and you defined it, why does it come to fruition? Where are you going to talk to God at? Don't you know, brothers and sisters, that when you think about God, in your intelligent mind, that's what you call it. I'm thinking about God. But did you understand that God knows what you're thinking before you think it? He knows your intentions before you know your intentions. Now you say, Murad, how do you come to that conclusion? You know, brothers and sisters, we does what we call, we go through exercises of prayer. And in those exercises of prayer, we say certain things. I have taught it on Tuesday to you all, went through all of the rituals, but I want to cut through the chase and just prove a point. Before you go down in ruku and you say Allahu Akbar, if you forgot to say Allahu Akbar, Allah knows that you forgot to say Allahu Akbar. He gives it to you anyway. He didn't need you to say it. He knew what was in your heart before you went into ruku position. Now, sisters and brothers out there that doesn't understand the Arabic word, is that when we come from that high horse, our head in the Bible says your head is in the sky. You only can come to God upright. You can't come to God on your knees. You have to come to God upright, as he created every human being to be upright. So we go to prayer upright, and we stand upright. But then we bend where from vertical, but we bend in a horizontal position. But every time we move, we say, Allahu Akbar. Because God is great. You can't move. Not a tree. Not a tree can't grow a branch without the will of God. And a leaf can't fall from that branch without the will of God. So you can't get down in that position unless it's the will of God. But why are you bent? Because you don't bend your back for nobody but God. That's right. Now they got a saying. But they don't know what they really saying because they take it literally, bent over for nobody. But they don't mean it the way I'm explaining it to you. It means that nobody's bending over for anybody to be screwed. And that's how man is. That's how he tricks up the words. But God asks you to bend your back for him. So your back is in vertical, horizontal position coming from the vertical. But what is equal now? Because the head in the vertical was up in the sky. That's why the Bible said your head is in the clouds. That's what it says in the Bible. They got it pretty right. Because you come here with a big head and you think you over top everybody, so that brain is in the sky. But now you are in Ruku, which is horizontal position. And your hands is on your knees. Why are you in that position? Well, you're in that position because the heart and the head is equal. Whoa, the head ain't over top the heart no more. It becomes equal. So God is saying to you, man and woman, that if that intellectual mind ain't in tune with the heart that pumps blood to you in every part of that body, if that heart stops, you're gonna, buddy. So therefore, the heart is saying, I'm no bigger than you, brain. And brain, you're not bigger than me. However, we must be in tune. So go down in Ruku position. Get in the position and as horizontal that you can be in. Whoa. Now you got to come back up. And you got to come back up. And what did you say? Allahu Akbar. I know we say semi alive. But the brothers and sisters out there don't understand that. They don't get it. But I'm talking not just to you. I'm talking to men and women out there that doesn't understand why we do the ritual. And pardon me. You who say all the Arabic words don't know why you're doing it. Because no one taught it to you. I tell you, I'm a student of Imam Wallace Muhammad. And everything you do in life is a meaning to it. That's the way God performed when he created you. Christmas says, in his image. And that worked for a while, but you're not in the image of God physically. And that's the way they took it, physically. But the only thing that controls God, that allows you to know that God is great in your image, is internally. Everything operates by the will of God unless you destroy it. If you destroy it, you know, when man builds a machinery, it rides right. And if you put the right oil in it, it's going to continue to ride correctly. If you put gasoline in it, it will, the right gasoline, it's going to ride correctly. But put the wrong gasoline, all of a sudden, the car will not move. It's pumping and making noise. Because why? You put something foreigner that doesn't belong in that engine. And now you get behind that automobile and you start it up. But there's something wrong with the generator and it ain't start. So where do you take the car? To the one who created the car. That mechanic knows that car from top to bottom and he will fix it. You don't know how to fix it. Well, where did man get that from? Because you cannot take the germs and the diseases in your body unless you pray to God that he will bless some man that can come up with a formula that can come and assist you to put that human body back together. You can't do it for yourself. All this is the will of God. So Allah allows man his image by using material substance to say that that computer that I created comes from the will of God that created us like a computer. I say it to you all the time. I can come on this station and just go in my hard drive, and bring it up. And that's my topic for tonight. But the difference from my computer that was created by God and your computer that you don't know how to operate it, that if you go to the physical computer that man made, who do the computers give credit to? Man. Man created. But man ain't perfect. Water on that computer is not going to work. It will literally shut down. Nothing will come up. But if you pour water on this human computer, oh, the difference is you talking about the physical, and the water in Revelation is knowledge. Knowledge. So pour water on me. Pull up my hard drive. Because I got all that knowledge that I went out and researched and studied, and now I can give it back to you. Oh, I come on the radio for the next 10 years, every day, 3-4 hours a day, and guarantee you I got something to say. The problem is you don't want to listen. And this is why Allah asks you all, when you come to prayer, you put your hands up by your ear, and you call the Adam. But why you put your hands behind your ear, brother? Because Allah is asking you to listen, to listen. If you don't listen, you ain't getting. Allahu Akbar, Allahu Akbar. Ain't nobody there. Ain't nobody there. Your wife didn't come home last night. She was with mama. Allahu Akbar, Allahu Akbar. The children ain't in the house. Where are they? They're with mama. Asadullah, who are you talking to, brother? You're talking to those five senses. You awaken those five, calling them to prayer. So they have to listen that you are awake. So you come on up, and you stand back up upright. And now you got to go down the sajdah prayer. And you got to put that big head on the floor, on the rug, wherever you're bowing on. And you got to take that thumb by both ears and close your fingers and put your head and your knees and your toes must be bent. If someone took a picture of it, it's like you in the womb of your mama. But why did Allah ask you to get down there? Because down there reminds you where you came from. When you was in the womb of your mama, Allah was in control. You had nothing to serve in your mind. Oh, brother, you was in heaven. There was nobody disturbing you. There was nobody evil can touch you. There's no jinn in there. You are the creation of God, all you without any sin. But the head is on the rug, just like they told Moses. What did God tell Moses? Throw down that staff, Moses. Throw down that staff. And don't tell Pharaoh what you said. Put that head on the floor, Moses. Take that big head that you got all these half numbers saying, hello, Mr. Ali. Good morning, Mr. Ali. Assalamu alaikum, Brother Muhammad. Put that staff on the ground. Throw it down. And he put his head on the ground. Tell that ruler of man and woman, Pharaoh. Now you down there trying to tell Pharaoh to let the people go. What people? you took it physical, brother. You took it physical. Who is Pharaoh? Pharaoh, that chin that got your five senses all locked up, begging him for that which you can do for yourself. You got to let it go. You got to take it out of bondage. Put that big head on the ground. Well,
I can't go, Lord. Give me Aaron. Who is Aaron? I know, he's physical. No, no. Aaron is your ego. Oh, Aaron can speak the tongue. You know, you educators, you can speak the tongue of the white folks. I have their education. Allah said, put that head on, but my tongue is tied. You know, use the word that Moses' tongue, he couldn't speak the language properly. Allah said, don't tell them your language. Put your head, empty everything that you got in that big head, bow inside your prayer, and tell them what God said. Give them the word of God. Tell them I'm the Lord. Say, let those people go. Let those five say, Allah is talking to you. But now you're down there with that big head, with all those degrees. Are you ever wondering where the heart? Oh, it's not parallel of the head, is it? The heart is above the head. Why? Well, let me tell you why. You ever say, I love that man, but I don't know why. Oh, y'all put love in the heart of the man and the woman. You won't give your intellectual mind to God. You of this world. So God said, put your head down on the rug. What is the heart? The heart will never question God. But you will. I can tell you something right now. I don't know if that's true. Did God say that? That's you. But in your heart, it says, question God. It's your big head that question God. And that's why you have to bow in such a prayer. And you got to bow down like an infant that came in this world that never questioned God. The Holy Quran should not be questioned because no man on the face of the planet ever lived can take credit for the Holy Quran. For the words of the Quran is Allah, not man. So you got to go in the Quran and read this for you to understand Satan, and for you to understand why this jinn manipulates you. It's the simple things, brothers and sisters. That's all I'm trying to give you. Because if you get the basis, then you will understand. God will give you better understanding. I can't give it to you. All I could do is plant the seed. But if you know good in that flesh, if you stoop down to that animal nature, you ain't getting this. It will not come to you. You're just going through the rituals. And the rituals is not taking you to heaven. Because if you keep doing the same thing over and over again, man will tell you that. And you get the same results, you need a psychiatrist. How can a man or a woman do the same thing over and over and over and don't have no progress? They don't believe. When I was a youngster, I used to watch the werewolf. I didn't like it, but there's only one TV, and my sister was the boss. She was the oldest, my older sister, Jo. And she liked all these monster pictures. I didn't. I used to get up under her because I was scared as hell. But I saw Dracula come after this priest. And I said, oh, he getting ready to bite him and suck his blood out. And the priest took out the cross. I said, oh, get back. Get back. And I said, whoa, this cross is something. Matter of fact, as a young man, I said, I'm glad I go to church. My mama sent me to church. And then one day, I saw Dracula, and the priest took out his, get back, back. And Dracula knocked that cross down and bit the hell out of it. It blew my mind at 5 or 6 years old. How in the world could he knock the cross and then suck his blood? And then it dawned on me. I didn't know as I grew old. It ain't the cross. Dracula knew that what he represented, he didn't even believe. That was it. So we wear crosses around our neck. We hang it from our mirrors. We have it on our wall, and we think that's going to save us. And that's how they make their money. But then as I studied scripture, I realized years ago, paganism was number one. That was the religion. Everything, you go in Egypt, everything looked like a lion, a tiger, a wolf, whatever animal is, they all want to be animals. Even when they fought in the war, they wore helmets that looked like animals. That's that animal first, love and praise idol God. So today you're doing the same thing in the modern technology. History repeating itself. You heard it. History repeating itself. So you think a cross is going to save you. And you got a diseased heart. You diseased it. God didn't disease it. It was pure. That blood was pure. That's what keeps you alive. But you diseased it. So when we say the seal, who unlocked that seal? You ever see an animal by the river? It's black. What do they call it? A seal. Why they name the seal? Man named it a seal. Because the seal don't walk. It doesn't run. It slides. It's slippery. All do slide. So when they say, did you unlock the seal of the truth? What are they saying to you, brothers and sisters? They are saying that revelation just slides all past you. And you can't unlock it. The Lord blesses one to cut for us and unlock that seal. Muhammad the Prophet, sallallahu alayhi wa sallam. That's reality. He unlocked it. He opened your eyes to Satan, to the jinn, and created, instilled in you in his everyday life that I serve my Lord. I'm obedient to God. As long as I'm obedient to God, I have the angels and the jinn that heard a beautiful recital. I have God who is close to me in my jugular vein. How could he lose with the stuff he used? So that's how we know these different sayings. It's the same way all through the universe they know Muhammad the Prophet. Who did it? But this is why I want to come to you through our radio show. Because men and women will instill in you and motivate you that you can live in this world and deal with Satan's world and never get out of paradise. Or if you get out of paradise, you're by yourself. What is paradise? Paradise is want for your brother that which you want for yourself. What is paradise? Paradise is not allowing anyone tell you that they are son of God. Don't let nobody tell you that they are the only ones that know who God is. But God has said, I didn't say it. God said that I will rule my earth, all of them. He didn't say one of them, but all my human beings, I will rule the earth. Oh, listen to God speak and you'll get it. Listen to man tell you anything and he's just saying to you for the gratification of his own self. Bill Cosby. I never brought up Bill Cosby because I want to know why would a man who wants to buy NBC, you know how much it costs to buy NBC? No, you don't know. But you got to have at least over $900 million. I'm sorry, $900 billion to buy a network of that sort. Now, why would Bill Cosby have to drug people? He was a handsome guy. He was an athlete. He was in shape. And he was a star. Why do he have to drug women to get sex? When he could have said, you in the fourth row, I give you $20,000, but you got to do what I say in the room. And you over there, I'll give you $20,000. And you over there, boy, everybody's handing the floor. Because most women are opportunists. 20,000? And all I got to do is give you some sex? Well, which way? Well, do whatever you want with me. Can I come back again? That's 40. How about I come to you every month? The man had fears. So I want to know something ain't right about this. And if you look at these women, they give you a picture before and after. I don't see nothing so attractive about it. I don't see the Caucasians that is beautiful. They're so fine Caucasian women. He ain't had neither one of them. He had some of the most strange-looking women they are. So I went and did my whore, and thank you to whoever sent it to me. So I stayed up for 2 days looking at it. And I can't go into depth, but I'm going to give you some food of thought. They found 17 women that lied. 17 that lied. Somebody gave them money to set up Bill Cosby. The little young girl, she's out of her mind, and she was a prostitute. But yet, that's the one that they said she can get them. But look where it started from, a comedian. A comedian that didn't know nobody, never was on the circuit in his whole life, but just so happened they had cameras there. Now, the email Wallace Muhammad gives you the truth. We don't see no cameras there. Minister Farrakhan gives you the truth. We don't see no Farrakhan there, no cameras there. Jesse Jackson. Well, he might get it because they say he ran for office. But they don't come in our neighborhood to televise us. But so happened, they televised this brother and shot it and it went viral. Well, what did they do? They paid him to talk about Bill Cosby in his sexual relationship. Paid the women to make it big. What is all this? And Rashida, I think that's her name, the one that played his wife, Rashida, whatever her name is, with her beautiful, gorgeous specimen of a physical human being. But I ain't talking about that. I'm talking about her heart. He said, this is all created to kill the image of a black man that can leave a legacy for our children. I don't believe it. Oh, you address the women? I ain't tell you that. I know Bill Cosby. Well, where are the women? Where are the black women? They do it to all our leaders. The Honorable Elijah Muhammad had 20 wives. They killed Malcolm, hated Malcolm. He's dead. Now he got streets named, schools named after him. Dr. King was a womanizer. You saw the movie. They set him up. They played like he was having sex and sent it to his wife, but she didn't go for it. Thank Allah. This is what they do to our leaders. Well, if they could do that to Bill Cosby, who's worth being, and the man was trying to change and tell blacks, pull up your pants and how you should teach us, they didn't want that. Satan don't want that. So they shut you down with the media. So what happened to innocent until proven guilty? So you all done sent the man to jail. You won't even talk about him. They took down all his names in the schools, including his wife. His wife didn't do nothing. But why are they doing this, brothers and sisters? You need to wake up and realize that Satan is trying to erase the tashia of Imam Wallace Muhammad. Because most of our imams don't talk like that. They're afraid. They got no backbone. They will never tell you if you're wrong. To Allah remove you. And you say, you got sons, brother. You got 8 sons. None of them talk like you. Talk baseball. Talk football. Talk rapping. Talk degrees. They don't talk like this. Hell, if my nephews and my sons and all turned on this radio, well, we'll have 100 people in a matter of one say, hey, look at that. And that's the way Satan wants your legacy to die with you. You better wake up, kind of you. There's a group of gins out here. and they make themselves known by shutting you down with the media. I've been through the acid test. They came after me because they don't want me. You got a thing with Jay-Z and all them. These boys got money, but they don't have freedom. They are manipulated, and they does not get out of order. Cut them off. They'll cut them off right away. People say, why didn't that man come to you and you know all of this? Can't. He's a slave to the system. Brothers and sisters, the reason I'm going to get my females from behind this door, because I'm tired of being outside with these bunch of chumps and cows. Those women, a man told me, go get our Muslim women. Go get those women that's Christian and let them come and support you. He said, now you got support, because they'll call like they see it. You wait around for these weak-ass, sissy men that claim they're one thing, but they're not. They're some good men, but you sisters out there all by yourself just running, and you leaving your legacy behind while you playing games out there, and you doing this and you doing that, and it's temporarily because you got to die. You got to die this world. The sad thing, you're dead while you're walking and don't even know it. And I'm trying to tell you to wake up. To wake up and be obedient to God and let's build this community so our children, our babies can step into our shoes and keep walking. That's what I'm trying to do, inshallah. So I'd come on every day. I got a lot to take. On the same subject, I could talk for this for a whole week. That is a conspiracy. It's a conspiracy to get rid of Malcolm. It was a conspiracy to kill the Honorable Elijah Muhammad. It was not death now. See, keep in mind, they didn't kill Jesus. The Quran will tell you that. But they wanted to kill the word of Jesus. They wanted to kill the word of the Honorable Elijah Muhammad. Not him physically. They wanted to kill the word of Emmanuel Wallace Muhammad. His word. Not his physical body. They would have been a guerrilla warfare if that would have happened. But they want the word to stop. They want Bill Cosby owning no major network and bringing in speak on the behalf of the world. That's why they want Obama out of there. You, it's something. You got to understand, social life is what God created us. We came from our mother. You get hung up in that political world and don't understand the social world rules the world, not the political world. But you got to be political to be in position to run a government. But that ain't the pillar of the world. It's not political, because if it was, we wouldn't be in all this trouble. But you forget your mama. You forget your daddy. You forget our community. Come on back to your original self and stand up in your spirit and stand up in your soul and be obedient to God and watch us soar. I thank you for listening to me. And I want to bring on the next show. If I say anything to hurt you, I apologize. If I split any verb, I'm human. But if I say anything to move you, to give you the opportunity and the life to want something in this world and come together collectively as a community, give that credit to Allah, subhanahu wa ta'ala. I end my show with the greetings from all the prophets, Prophet Muhammad, the seal of the prophet. May the peace and blessing of Allah be upon him and his companions and his son. And I want to start my next show with bringing on Sister Camilla Tajuddin. Camilla Tajuddin, are you there?
As-salamu alaykum, Brother Murad. I am here.
Wa alaykum as-salam, my beautiful sister. I want to tell the people that this will be your show. I offer it to you and you accept it, and I'm surely on behalf of New Africa Excellent Enterprise LLC, we welcome you. We have at least 40% of my corporation are females, and it would not bother me. It was vice versa. My whole life in success in this world comes from you female, and from my mama to my wife to my corporation in the world today. where you coming from, I have a young lady there in that part of the country who walked into my life, and she's a Christian. And I love her character and her expertise, and she took me around the world. And I talked to many people with her expertise. I call her, but Allah sent it to me, and we rule the boxing world. I want you all out there in Radio Land to understand that this young lady had her own TV show for years, did her own commercials, and became very successful. And her husband, we all know him by Tajuddin, that's her last name. He's very respectful, came through the first experience, was a martial artist, and very educated. And we love him, his character. She speaks more than he does. If you see him, if you don't give him the greetings, he'll just sit there. But if you talk to him, you'll see how educated he is. But he welcomes his wife to give her expertise to society. So this is your show, Dr. Dean, and I'm going to turn it over to you. And anytime you need to ask me something, I will speak. And I greet you. Assalamu alaikum.
Alaikum assalam. Well, Murad, I wanted to talk to you. A lot of people have heard of you. For those few that haven't, you were one of the top boxing promoters on the scene for years, and you had and worked with some of the biggest names in boxing. You had a lot of fighters that you worked with, including Manny Pacquiao, that from the Philippines, the same Manny Pacquiao that fought Floyd Mayweather Jr. several months back. Of course, he did lose the fight. Let's talk about, you know, your relationship with him and how you got to sign him to work with you as his promoter.
That's an excellent question. And when you write your resume, it always starts from today and it goes back. It never starts from the back to the front. And Pacquiao was my last great introduction of an asset to the boxing world that I embraced. I was getting ready to fly out to the IBF, and my former wife, who ran the IBF as a president, asked me to come to Florida because she was in a jam. So many of the major promoters was attacking her. Didn't like that she was a female over one of the largest sanctioned bodies in the world. And, you know, you had the WBA, WBC, and you had the IBF. So I got a call from one of my assistants. He was really my interpreter. And I taught him how to matchmake, but his name was Samson Lukowicz. And Samson was selling watches and different gold and silver, but he can take the English language and speak it well in Spanish. So I asked him to join me. I remember he used to, as we walked through the mall, and said, "Why would you pay me this kind of money? What could I do to deserve this kind of money?" And his wife had cancer, and so I wanted to pay him enough to take care of his family and not be a slave to me. And I used to say to him, "You're going to earn this one day. If you keep doing what you're doing, you're going to be a great asset." And so what happened is he called me and he said, "Boss," he always say he's in the army of Muhammad. He said, "Boss, where are you going? I hear you're going to Florida." I said, "Yes," and I told him why. He said, "Do yourself a favor and go to California." I said, "Samson, I got something to do, and when I'm called by a loved one, come running." He said, "Boss, there's a fighter out there, and you need to go just take a look at him. One day will not hurt." So I did. I flew out to California, and I met this lawyer, African-American, very promised lawyer. And he told me he has a fighter, but nobody wants him. And I said, "What do you mean?" He said, "Well, we've been in here for 2 years. We went to Don King, Bob Arum. And when the two major promoters turned down, he went to Duva. He made a couple of more. But he says, one guy that I got to call. And he said, because Goosen never gave me a feminine no. So he put him on the speaker and he got his matchmaker. And he said, I don't understand. You have not called me back. He said, the kid got knocked out and we don't want to invest in that. And he said, all right, well, I got my rod here. And so the matchmaker said, well, he's the resurrector. You know, he'll resurrect him. So I waited for about 4 hours. The fighter and the manager showed up. So he said, come on, let's go to his apartment. I said, well, if he ain't there, how are we going to get in? He said, no, I got the key. They come over here. I set this all up for him. So I went in there, and as I sat down, we was waiting. So I said, you got any tapes on this kid? They put the tape in, and when they put the tape in, I was watching him, and I seen these fighters just fall, but I don't see the punch. So I said, let me put this on slow motion. And he was hitting them with a body punch, because I thought they was taking dives, because it was all over there. I said, my God, he hit that boy like he's a martial artist. So when he came, the manager came in, opened up his mail, and he was real kind of quiet, very subtle. And he didn't smile. So he said, I want you to meet Murad Muhammad. He didn't know me. And I said, well, I like your kid. He said, well, what are you going to do with him? Nobody wants him. I said, I'll give you $10,000 to fight on my undercard. He said, what undercard? I said, I got Javier Casaleo, the world champion, defending his title against Oscar De La Hoya. He's coming out. He said, Oscar's coming out of retirement. I said, sure. He said, okay. How much are you going to give me? I said, I'm going to give you $10,000. And on a napkin, I wrote, I have the exclusive rights of this boxer, win or lose, for the next year. Now, there ain't no contract. It was just a letter of intent. And he said, why should I sign that? I said, because I make miracles. He said, okay, he signed it. So I had him fighting underneath the African on HBO with Javi Casaleo fighting Oscar. But the African, this is his fifth time on the air knocking out everybody. He was a monster.
And the African is who fought Pacquiao.
That's correct. So what happened is I signed them on a Saturday. Tuesday, the semi-event fell off. A boom boom from South Africa's opponent fell out on a Tuesday. So I called Mariam, my ex. I said, hey, dear. I said, send out a mandate that I'm the mandatory challenger. Said, Mariah, you're not the mandatory. Who you got? I said, Manny Pacquiao. Said, Mariah, he's number 6 in the world. We got to go to number 2, number 3. I told Samson in my office to call all of the opponents. Office went to work, called me back, and said, nobody's available. So I said, Marion, I'll wait by your phone call, but I already did your homework. There's nobody available. Because nobody will fight for a title within 2 weeks. Not that monster. So sure enough, number 7 wasn't available, and it reads number 1 available contender. So that's where we fell in at. So Ludabella, who had just left HBO, and they gave him about $3 million to go in the business to be a promoter and a matchmaker, he told everybody in Las Vegas that this was a fix, that Marion was my wife, and this shouldn't happen in boxing. Husband and wife is saying who's going to go on the air. Now, remember, he ain't with any speed hole no more. So I get a call from Carrie Davis, the vice president, and the president at that time was Ross Greenberg, and they said, we want to ask you one question, Milan. Do we have a fight? I said, you got the next world champ. So they trust me because everything I deliver comes to fruition. So we at ringside now, and the fight is live on HBO before my main event. And I'm sitting at ringside with my champion, Smoke Gaynor. And Gaynor said, let me tell you one thing. He said, what that fighter going to do to your kid, he's going to beat him up, and then he's going to get off and let him look like he's in the fight, and he's going to knock him out. I said, we're going to knock him down. You ain't going to see the punch, and then we're going to knock him out. He said, yeah, right. When the bell said ding, Pacquiao came out, and boy, they were throwing bars. Pacquiao broke his nose. The fighter went down. The referee said slip. And the punch, he couldn't see. Smoke Gaynor didn't see. I knew it. That's why I signed him with a body. And when he wouldn't get up, the referee started counting. Smoke Gaynor said, my God. He got up. We wore in the third round, wore with the guy in the fourth round, fifth round. We knocked him out. Cold. And that's what made Pacquiao, because it was a mark on the foreign fighters from the Asian world that get killed in the ring. And I call him the baddest fighter, pound for pound, in his weight class ever came to the shores of North America. And that's my introduction to the boxing world with Pacquiao, a man that nobody wanted.
But it seemed like after you got him, there was some jealousy amongst some of the other promoters that did not want to have him when they saw the value in him and how much money that he was going to be able to make. You know, it seemed like, you know, those type of things and negative statements that they made concerning you because out of jealousy people do things like that.
Well, I mentioned that on my show about Bill Cosby. That's why I can, me being a bad guy, so they can steal him. But, see, they not promoted. And King and Allen was too fearful because I was sued. I had some of the best attorneys there are. So it was always the P-brains, which I call bookers and agents. But what I did something so unique, is that when you put on a major card like I did, when you do an undercard, remember now, the undercard with Pacquiao fought was not my card. It was Cedric Kushner. But because I had the main event, I got the millions of dollars. But because he had the semi-event, the promoter has to pay at least $1 million for that fight because he was hooked with the Oscar and them. However, I will take the semi-event and I will deliver the opponent, pay for the fighters, pay for the promotion, pay for everything. So I moved Pacquiao. He would never have been this four-time million-dollar fighter if I didn't build him. So yeah. I built him on every major card. If you saw Mike Tyson, you saw Pacquiao. If you saw a Latino champion, you saw Pacquiao. If you saw every fighter, I took the undercard. So people said, well, Mirage didn't promote him. They didn't know that I had to pay the fighter. I had to pay the opponent. I had to pay for the publicity. I had to pay the judges, that's why I have license in 40 states because I couldn't come in as just an agent. I had to come in as a promoter because I had to put the match together and I had to pay the sanctions fee. I had to pay the referees. I had to pay the judges. I had to pay the commissioner. I was the promoter in each one of those states. And that's how I built it. I said, promoting myself, I could make money, but I would never get to the seven figures if I didn't showcase them on every major show there was. And that's how we became a magnificent, unbelievable commodity. And what did it is when I took the Three Musketeers. I took Barrera, I took Marquez, and I took Eric Morales. And that's why we was able to draw 15 and 20 million. And of course, today, he was worth over $100 million for one fight.
Well, Eric Morales and Marquez, that was the fight in New Orleans?
Yes, and you know,
because I think I was there. You had brought me in to do some interviews, you know, there in New Orleans, and I think that was in the early 90s, I think it was.
Well, yeah. I had Roy Jones Jr. Roy Jones Jr.
Yeah, because I interviewed Roy there in New Orleans. He was fighting, Eric Harding?
Yes, I believe it was Eric Harding. Mm-hmm. You see, what I did with Roy is I took Roy where everybody wouldn't go. Mississippi, New Orleans, I owned the Gulf. Mm-hmm. I made billions for those owners, and I walked in and told them if they give me opportunity, I'll raise their monetary compensation high. That's how I became a phenomenal into all the garden, the networks. Everybody asked me to come out of the South and come to New York, and I said, yeah, I'll come if you give me Radio City Music Hall.
I remember meeting through you the mayor of New Orleans, I guess Morial. You know,
he was a good man. We had a flood. We had a flood all the way up to our knees. I didn't know it rained like that in New Orleans. And they said, cancel the fight. I said, no, we ain't cancel the fight. And 2 o'clock in the morning, afternoon, the sun came out and the water, the sea went right back down. And so they had sent out billboards, a bulletin saying, don't come to New Orleans. I had to change that. So I thanked that mayor because we stayed in his office to 5 o'clock selling tickets to all the major companies, and that's how we had a sellout.
I remember Michael Jordan came because he was a fan of Roy Jones Jr. You remember he was sitting ringside because I had a camera there, and HBO got upset because, of course, they didn't want another camera. I wasn't inside the arena. I was going to do interviews, you know, outside. And Big George Foreman, of course, you know, I had interviewed him before on the radio. He was there because he also was a boxing analyst for HBO. So I remember that, and I remember the Master P also performed. Him and his brother performed that night at the fight. And you had Imam Warfi Muhammad, who was alive at that time, ringside. You recall that?
Yes, I do. What happened is Michael didn't sit at ringside because he was a fan of Roy. When I went to see Phil Knight and told him I can raise his bottom line for $5 billion if he will allow me, he said he didn't want anything to do with boxing. So they turned Roy down. He called me back, and he said, maybe you can help me. I want to introduce you to this gentleman here. And when he said his name was Michael Jordan, I was shocked because I didn't follow boxing. Everybody think I'm not a sports fanatic, so I don't know all these athletes. So Michael said he wanted to launch a brand. Could I help him? I said, yes, I can. He said, well, how much do I have to pay you? I said, you can't pay me. I said, but what you can do is replace Budweiser on my ring, because I always didn't like to have the King of Beers, but, hey, they rule boxing. So we made a very financial deal, and I said, if I get paid on what I do, if we don't do it, I don't want to get paid. And he agreed with me, so he sat with me every fight. And he fell in love with Roy. But he was there because I put the jump man in the middle of that ring for the first time in the history. And I built Jordan Brand. And then I remember when we flew in on the helicopter, and I was in the hotel with my butlers, and they, and he was too, but over in his room, he had all the singing groups because he was celebrating his success. And he said, what can I do for you? Just tell me. I said, we're making money, Mike. Well, what do you mean, what could you do for me? He said, but there's something I could do for you. I said, okay, give that young man a sneaker. Never before in the history of the sports world that anybody ever gave a fighter his own shoe. Muhammad Ali didn't have that. He said, that's what you wanted? So he made a sneaker of Roy Jones Jr., Jordan Brand, Nike, and we sold thousands of them.
Oh, that was great. Yeah, I didn't realize that Roy had a sneaker deal.
Yes. Roy had a whole lot of deals that I created for him. Remember, we used to have, my office was in Donald Trump's apartment. We had an apartment there on right off of Fifth Avenue, and
yeah.
and we used to oversee the New York, and you know that's very expensive. And we rang the bell because I won the heavyweight championship of the world, never been done in over 106 years. And so the Fish Company came to me and wanted Roy to represent the Fish Company, and I negotiated. They gave him a Bentley, and so I was the president of the company. And we was on our way doing a soft drink, and something happened. And something happened with Roy, understand. But, yeah, we was on top of the world.
Wasn't it a 96, 97, I believe, you he signed with you for you to promote him with Roy Jones and did a number of, you know, shows together. But Roy has retired, and you remember he won the heavyweight title, but the Spanish guy, the heavyweight champion at the time, and he won. He's retired, and he's still boxing. Of course, he lost his last fight over in Russia. How do you feel about him now, understand that he's going to fight on?
I have promoted Roy at pound for pound, the best fighter in the world. I raised him from 3,000. They used to give him 3,000. They used to give him 3 million a fight before I walked into his life.
Mm-hmm.
He came and got me. I promised my wife that I wasn't going to promote in our hometown so I could be with the family. And he walked in and asked me to meet him at the restaurant and asked me would I take over his career. And I said, I can't do that. Your lawyer is my lawyer, and they own you. He said, yeah, but they got me at a standstill. I said, you got the best lawyer in the world.
This they were out of Pensacola, correct, those two brothers?
They were the best. The mm-hmm. Fred Levin, each one of his cases, they made libraries after him. And he doesn't get no less than 50 million. And
wow.
he did over 50 of them. And he belongs to an elite legal organization around the country.
Mm-hmm.
So I said, well, Roy, you got a contract, man. I'm no lawyer. I'm going to break that contract. He said, you can do anything. I said, man, you better go get that Jewish lawyer. He said, you ain't going to go against another Jew. I said, yeah, you're right. I said, okay, I'll tell you what. In New York, and announce that you got something to say, and you tell the world who I am, and I'll do it. He said, but don't tell my lawyer and your lawyer because he'll go tell everybody. I said, no. He said, when do you want to do it? I said, when you're ready. He said, let's do it this week. I said, no, you got to get the press more headway. So he did. He called it on Basketball City in New York. And I'm looking out the window. They were pulling up. It was about 300 people there, all from all the networks. And because he was on Basketball City, my friend Magic Johnson had just got his promoter's license. So they figured he's going to go with them. And so Aram, everybody was there but Don King. I heard he sent someone in and he had his private jet ready for Don, for Roy to announce it because he offered Roy $2 million to sign with him. So Roy said, well, ladies and gentlemen, I want to thank Square Ring. They brought me through the amateurs and I'm undefeated. He said, but that's as far as they can take me. I need someone with longevity. Well, Magic Johnson just went out the window because he just got his license. He said, one with integrity. Well, Don King just went out the window. Everybody wondered who he's going to pick. When he said Murad Muhammad, it blew everybody's mind. Roy has signed the best fighter they know today, signed with Murad Muhammad. So when I went into HBO, that's how I met this guy named Lou DiBella because I didn't know Lou. I was with HBO for over 20 years, and I knew Seth, I knew the lawyer, and I know the pay-per-view guy, Mark Cassidy. But I didn't know all these other guys. There's about five there, and an African-American. So Lou DiBella called Roy Jones Jr., everything but a nigger. An ingrate, a this and that. And so I said, Seth, I said, let's act like man and woman. Your wife ain't in love with you no more. So you're either going to get a divorce or you're going to mend this. I said, he's a big league outside, and he looks good. But ain't going nowhere without no gasoline. You got to give me more money. So Lou went crazy. That's how I met him for the first time. He's been there for 15 years. I never met him, never had to deal with him. So he said, well, what do you want? He said, give me $1.5 million. He said, and you'll get him in the ring, you'll get him to the press conference, because he don't show up at press conference, and he just go home, we can't find him. So he says, okay, I'll put my trust in Marad, because when Rod says something, if no one could do it, he could do it. I said, but Seth, I don't want to deal with this gentleman here, because he don't know how to talk, and I cannot put up with anybody that say anything out their face, especially if he don't look like me. But give me that guy there. I don't know him. What's his name? He said, that's Cary Davis. I said, give me Cary Davis. Now, am I a racist, Seth? He said, I've been knowing you've been with 17, 20 years with HBO. You're not a racist. I said, but, guy, I could curse him out, and he'd curse me out, but we'll come back and make up and do a deal. I said, but if he can't give me what I want, then I'm coming directly to you, like I've been doing. He said, I have my money on Mirage. And that's how he went from $3 million, that when I finally walked away from Roy, he was making $17 million, the highest paid athlete ever came out of HBO.
Well, that was great. In case you're just joining us, I'm Camilla Tajuddin, and on the program with me is Mirad Muhammad, and we're talking about boxing. But Mirad, you have a very interesting task. You were the security guard for Muhammad Ali, known as the greatest and probably one of the top greatest heavyweights in the world. Well, definitely is. Very charismatic, very handsome, and very nice person. Let's talk about how you got to become a security guard for the great Muhammad Ali.
Well, nothing happens. I always say not a leaf falls from the tree without the will of Allah.
Yes.
But they pointed me, randomly, and said, you go over there, Ali needs some security. So I went to Muhammad, and I began to secure him. I was just doing my job. So I had an opportunity now, being around him, that he's going to fight. And so the first fight was with Laura Foley in Madison Square Garden. So when I went over there, Ali was just amazed because I'm a martial artist. And he couldn't believe me looking so young, how in the world I'm going to protect him. But Ali was that curious type of guy. So when we went to the garden, all of them walked in, and I'm the last one, and they hold me back. They said, you can't get in. Ali had enough complimentary tickets. I didn't even know what complimentary tickets meant. I was just a young guy. Angelo Dundee, Bundini, none of them came back to get me. Who came back? Ali. And I said, how do you know I didn't get in? Because he must have looked around and said, I don't see Marat. So he told me, he said, let him in. He's with me. They said,
yeah.
No, Ali, he can't come in. He said, oh, he can't come in? He said, no. He said, all right, won't be no fight. And they let me in. So now, after the fight, he told me, put everybody out but me. He said, all right, don't let nobody get to me, and you secure me. I picked up the phone and called my sensei, Kareem Abdullah. Kareem, I said, hey, man, you want a job? Come with me. He came down there to the hotel. It was just he and I. Now, I felt secure because I felt anybody tried to come in. There was a knock on the door. Boom, boom, boom. Open the door, Cassius. Open the door. Open the door, Cassius. I said, Ali, there's a white guy with a cigar calling your name.
He said, "Well, what is his name?" He said, I said, Howard Cosell. He said, "Oh, yeah, open the door." That's how I met Howard Cosell. That's a true story. I got a witness because Kareem was there. And so that's how I met. And then from that point on, I went everywhere Ali went. I wouldn't care if it was up the street, down the street, at the shows, wherever. But then we started traveling outside the country. And when we went to Germany, Baja, may Allah be pleased with him, I always kept Baja under me. When I got there, all the cars was rented. So I told the guy, I'm with Muhammad Ali. And they gave me a Mercedes. Everybody wanted to know, how the hell did I get a Mercedes? And you got to drive on the wrong side. So I wasn't used to it, but I pulled up in a Mercedes. So Ali said, "You got somewhere to stay?" I said, "No." He said, "Go to the hotel on the other side of the road," and he flipped me the keys. It was a suite. I was so in awe, I jumped on the bed. I hit the switch. The curtains were closed. I hit another switch, all the lights came on. I hit another switch, the TV came on. I never saw that kind of technology. I said, "Whoa." So then I go in the bathroom, "Come here, they got two toilets." He said, "Two toilets?" I said, "Yeah." I said, "Now, I know what this one is, but what the world is this one?" So I put my head there. So Baja says to the mate, "Do you know what that is?" And before he said it, I turned the water on and shot off in my face, and she started laughing. I said, "Well, why is it two toilets?" He said, "Sir, this is the one you go to the bathroom, and this is the one the woman's cleaning herself with, call it the bank." I said, "Oh."
Yeah.
So I said, "Oh." And so with Ali, we was fighting Richard Dunn. So everybody was on the stage. The stage collapsed. Old little me jumped between the two holes. I lobbied my judge, and I caught Ali on his armpit with both of my arms and held him up to help him. Bundini went down and broke his leg. That was supposed to be Ali. He never forgot it. Then I got pictures of me and him going through the gas chamber. Pictures of he and I walking. That broke his heart to see the ovens that the Jews was put in. And so then we left there, and now we're going to Korea. We just left Germany. We're going to Korea, and we're going to fight Inoki. And when we went to fight Inoki, these guys were ripping telephones. But I was with Ali. Ali was trying to scam, and they would jump back. And I'm with Ali. And Ali said, "You got my back?" I said, "I'll fight them all." Now, how could I beat these gorillas? These are martial artists written telephone books in half. But Ali was scared of them.
And was that was in Korea or Japan?
That was in Tokyo.
It's okay, yeah, in Japan.
Tokyo.
Yeah, that's when the guys started going Harry Carry to his legs and tried to chop them.
Yeah, yeah.
Well, what
happened, I don't know, Herbert Muhammad, everybody thought I was Herbert's son. Because I never took money from Ali. Ali didn't ask me until after that fight. So what happened is Herbert was negotiating to get the money in the bank. And they told Herbert that this is Tokyo, and you got to go back to America where that contract is valid, but here is no good. So Herbert said, okay, shook their hand, we walked out. He said, "When we get to the hotel, tell everybody to be downstairs with all their suitcases. We get out of here." So over 150 of us, you can imagine how many, all these black folks in the lobby. Here comes the promoter running. Muhammad, what are you doing, Muhammad? He said, "I'm going back where my contract is valid." He said, "What do you mean?" He said, "Ain't no such thing as winner take all." "Well, my Ali signed it." He said, "Yeah, but Ali don't have no rights to sign." So they said, "Okay." He said, "Is that money in the bank? Or we leave it?" And they sent the money. Because it was daytime over here, and the money was in the bank, $5 million. We went back, and he fought the fight. The guy kicked him in the leg. It was a draw. That means a draw, you don't get paid.
Well, I like to say that, you know, Jabber, who was the son of Elijah Muhammad, and also he used to work on the railroad, he was an excellent manager and very, very close to Muhammad. They had a very, very close relationship. And I myself, you know, grew to love Jabber and used to talk to him a couple times a week in Chicago. And he cared a lot about me. And I know they used to say that Muhammad was very, very fond of you. He would do anything, come out for you and things like that. But we both got to know him on a very personal level and to see what a really nice person Muhammad really was and how sincere he was and how he cared about people. And he did a lot of charitable things that he didn't want to get credit for, and you know, because he would say, "Why do things to be seen of men?" And he donated a lot of money to old folks' homes and things like that, and he was a wonderful person. Today, a lot of people say how sorry they feel for him because he has Parkinson's, or some people will say he wishes he was dead, but we know that Muhammad doesn't wish he's dead. He knows that ultimately he will die. Every human being has the taste of death. But he still enjoys being who he is. He enjoys being Muhammad Ali. Recently, he had his 74th birthday, and both Larry Holmes and George Foreman were there. And you know both of them quite well. And a lot of people might not know it, but George Foreman, who he knocked out in Zaire, had became very close to Muhammad. He calls Muhammad every day in the morning times at home and everything. And he was close. Larry Holmes, of course, was a former sparring partner of his up at the camp at Deer Lake. So he was also very close to him. But Muhammad was a very giving person, a very loving person, and a very kind person. And I just wanted to put that out there. As a matter of fact, some people thought, they said that Joe Frazier was so angry and was very, very mad at him. And he did go to Joe Frazier's funeral. They didn't want him to go because of his illness, but he refused to stay home, and he did go there. And I understand recently when they put a statue of Joe Frazier in the cemetery that Muhammad sent a reef saying that we'll see each other again in heaven. So it's amazing the type of person, you know, that he is, that he was. And how much do you think boxing today has changed? When you look at Floyd Mayweather on Facebook, he was rating Muhammad Ali number 5. And I'm on Facebook, and people were saying, is this guy serious, Muhammad Ali number 5? But Floyd Mayweather is an excellent fighter, Floyd Mayweather Jr. He has made more money than any other fighter in the history of boxing has made. Although we've seen even Evander Holyfield in 1997, he was the richest athlete, they said, but he had money problems too. He had a mansion, $50 million, you know, they say cost over 50 rooms in it, and he ran into some financial things. I mean, a lot of fighters do. But what do you think about what Floyd had to say about Muhammad Durant?
Well, you got to understand.
Possibly it's because Muhammad is so famous. I mean, recently Floyd was in London, they said. Someone didn't recognize him, and he yelled, "Go to the Internet," but he didn't have to do that. I mean, sometimes that happens, but why Muhammad really became as famous as he did is because he spoke out against this system. He spoke out against the injustice. He spoke out how black people were being dog-sicked on them in Birmingham, Alabama, in the 60s. And still today, in 2016, there's racism. It would probably always be racism. And, of course, there's prejudice against Muslims and everything else, you know. So that's why he became famous. If he had not spoke out like he did, they probably would have never drafted him to go to Vietnam, you know. But because he was with Elijah Muhammad at the time, they wanted to punish him.
Well, you got
to
understand. Now, everything happens for a reason. Money comes and money goes. Or I could write a book on how many athletes would not do, after I made them large, what I asked them to do. And not to mention all their names, but every athlete that stopped listening to me either got knocked out or they just rolled off in the sunset. Because boxing is called the sweet science. But however, a promoter, and I always say there's only 3 of us. I'm not the first promoter, nor I'm the second promoter, but I felt I was demoted because I had something the other two didn't have. That's integrity, honesty, and I was transparent. So I raised the price. The way I promoted, why I loved boxing, I came into boxing through Muhammad Ali, seeing the world, and I wanted to be a part of it. But most people was upset with me because I educated the athletes. Eddie Mustafa, Saad Muhammad, Dwight Quarry, including Larry Holmes, who you mentioned, Joe Frazier. I traveled the whole country with Joe Frazier, with all his kids. Marvelous, I made a millionaire. But when they stopped listening because they felt I made it look so easy, they ran into difficulties. Pacquiao being the great promoter. I predict we was going to do $1 billion. They did a half a deal. I predict we were going to do $100 million. Don King and I did $1.17 million. But it took us two fights. It was so nice we did it twice with Razor Ruddock and Tyson. But what happened, I tried to tell Roy and all of them, Ali was unique. He was a fighter in the ring, but outside the ring, he was for all humanity. And he brought substance to the world. Now, how are you going to beat when you say, who is the most likeness in the whole world? The first one they gave was Jesus. Is that amazing? And then they said the second one, no, I'm sorry, let me do it different. They said the third one was Jesus.
Mm-hmm.
And the second one was Kissinger. And the
mm-hmm.
first one was Muhammad Ali. Now, we couldn't have write this stuff. This is what the writers of the world was right. So Ali.
Well, they said he had the most recognizable face on the planet Earth at one time.
That's correct. So they made him number one. Now, how mm-hmm. was a Roy or Larry Holmes or George Foreman or a Pacquiao can reach that height? So what happened is if you talk about any one of those fighters in the ring, you will mention their names. But after they retire, the history, the name doesn't even come up. Floyd Mayweather is a good fighter. But the pros will tell you he ain't fought nobody. But the mm-hmm. era that he was born in, look whose shoulders he stepped on. Ali opened that door for fighters to get paid in the seven figures. But
all athletes, they said, because they did, 'cause Jabber told me the first fight that he had in the Garden, And he said he told him he wanted Muhammad to get paid $1 million. I think no athlete, that was for the Joe Frazier fight, the first one, had ever made $1 million. And then the baseball and basketball, football players all started. Their money came up after that.
Tell you about that deal. All of the bosses of Madison Square Garden came to Herbie. And Herbie used to take me everywhere he went. And they walked in and they said, he called Yank Durham, the manager of Joe Frazier, the trainer, and said, stay out of this and I'm going to get you paid. So they offered Herbert $1 million, which was a lot of money. Wilt Chamberlain, none of them was making that kind of money. No football player, no basketball player, whether you was Caucasian. And remember now, they only had to fight an hour and a half because it was 15 rounds. So when Herbert walked out to talk to his lawyer, he said, Charlie, what do you think? Charlie being with Sidney and Austin, one of the biggest law firms in the world, he said, do you know what $1 million is? You and Joe Frazier will make $1 million, judge. He's called judge. And Herbert said, okay, walk back in. And he said, well, Herbert, do we have a deal? And he shook every four of them Caucasian hands. And he said, yeah, we got a deal when you get to $5 million. Split it down the middle with Frazier, and that was the first major payday in the history of all sports. Because Herbert wasn't a part of that society. See, there's a society, they don't let you in. They'll kick you out, let you in, or kick you out. And Herbert was not a part of that society. He used to watch Ali fight with his head in his lap. He didn't want to see the fight. So he was strictly business, always had a private jet to get home. Fight was always went home.
That's why people say I don't go home, but I go up to my suite. I don't socialize with all of that. You know, I'm like Howard Hughes. I give parties for $75,000, but so I wouldn't be anti-social. But you can't take $20 million and don't give a party. But you couldn't eat pork and you couldn't drink alcohol in my parties. But my parties were jamming, but I didn't go. Stayed up in my suite and I studied. So these fighters today have no substance in their moral decency. They just burning money. I understand just recently someone said Mayweather takes $100,000 out of the bank every day. Well, what? If he's giving it to his family, he's giving it to education, then yes. But there's no one around them that will pull their coat because they condone what they're doing. I can't do that.
Yeah, I know they said he used to spend $25,000 at strip joints, but I don't know if he's still doing that. But a lot of them, you know, look at Adrian Broner when he maybe he was playing, but he would set money on fire, showing pictures of him flushing it down the toilet and things like that. And he has a lot of children. He's not even married. I think he got 9 different kids by different women. So a lot of it is ignorance and, you know, everything.
Well, I will tell you, it's easy to have 9 children if I didn't have morals. Everywhere I went with my wife. My weakness was upstairs. I would have had children all over the world. He had 9.
Yeah.
I paid them. I'd have had 19, 20. But I had moral substance. But it's easy for them to fall victim because power is like wine. The more you get, the drunker you become. I had someone to tell me that a sister, and I'm quite sure she got it from the brother, they said, Murad is all about the money. And I told the sister, you should tell them that how do you come down where there's broke people? Everybody got a job down here. If I was all about the money, why not stay up there where everybody's entrepreneurs and they billions? The Steve Wynn's, the Donald Trump's, the Wally Barr's, the Kurt Kerkorian's, the Bob Iger's, all of them up here.
Well, you know, it's a funny thing that some people, especially you know, African-American people, think that Steve Wynn and Donald Trump are the only ones that should have that money. But if you and I make a good amount of money, there's jealousy and there's envy and all types of things, which is it doesn't really make a lot of sense that you are not supposed to. What can you do in this world? How can you live? How can you eat? How can you pay rent? How can you pay mortgage? Can you do anything without money? You need some money, you know. Yeah, you shouldn't worship the money. That doesn't make you a better human being, you know.
But the question was asked to me, when I come back to boxing, and I'm willing to openly say that there was $20 million for me and $50 million line of credit in 2 years, $150 million line of credit. But I ain't a slave to nobody. Mm-hmm. I was my own boss.
Yeah.
And I did it my way, the right way, transparent. And I was not going to allow myself to fall victim to someone dictating to me because to live that world, you got to do it their way. And it's not doing it their way. So I ran a corporation that I had to come up with $6-8 million every 2 months. How do you get it? You can't get it from your uncles. You can't get it from your brothers. You can't get it from anyone. So you got to be able to rise above that. Now, I don't feel like I'm in hell. I believe everything down here should be in heaven. And I got the way to show them through the tafsir of Imam Wallace D. Muhammad, the Holy Quran. And if you follow the Ushwa, Muhammad, the Prophet, you can make it in this world, and we can be wealthy, but not as individuals, as a community. So it's very difficult. You pulling things out of me that I guarantee whoever listens to this station don't have a clue. Don't have a clue, including my wife. Don't have a clue of the money and the responsibility. Remember, I had to produce live. I didn't do no delayed tapes. ABC, NBC, CBS, HBO, live telecast. And then I had to do my own production into 200 foreign countries and all these different languages. How do a guy from the project study religion can do that? Because
well, that's what I wanted to say, is that you you know, you came from projects in Newark where the expectations for a young African-American male was a low expectation. And it still is today, where they think so many of us are in jail on drugs, and which is, you know, that's not how they feel about their sons, but that's how they feel about ours. And so for you to have rise to the top, it would have created some jealousy among certain people, and being able to build nice homes like you did in white communities, some of them, you know, they think that's a sin too, because they don't think we should live better than, you know, anyone else would live, or even the white people can, they can be jealous of you. You saw that in Sussex County when they kept talking about my house was a mansion. It was 4,500 square feet. But they kept saying over and over again, oh, she lives in a mansion. And then when they come to the door, they say, who are you, the maid? And I said, no, but I'm the lady of the house. And so it is, you know, even Caucasians, because they feel a sense of entitlement, you know. And we have to have more self-worth about ourselves, you know. So you probably set a high standard. And, you know, look what happened with you and Don King. And Don King ended up owing you a lot of money in a Razor Ruddock fight, you know, and you had to go to court and things like that.
Yes.
Well, today, Don King doesn't promote much. They don't give him any fight dates anymore.
No, I told Don King, you will wear out because you're an individual. And he didn't want to be a corporation with men and women that have the mind. New Africa, excellent. Enterprise, LLC, they all, I guarantee them, inshallah, that they all will be millionaires. That's my goal, to prove that we can build a community. You have 60 seconds to close, and I'm going to shut up. I think I answered a lot of questions. You can close with your 50 minutes of what you want to say, how you're going to be back next and close out before the time is up.
Yes, I want to thank all the listeners that listened in today. We're going to be back on next week, next Sunday night. And inshallah, I might have a well-known boxer here with me waiting for him to get back to me to let you know. And I will have another show for you talking about boxing. I'd like to thank you. And I'd like to thank you, Murad, and I'd like to greet you with the greetings of all the prophets and Adam to Muhammad. As-salamu alaykum.
Wa alaikum assalam, my beautiful sister.